Good morning, folks. Thank you all for coming. Today, Jay Benton is going to present his PhD dissertation proposal, and we'll try to defend it. I guess the proposal, not his section. The work is titled Partial Satisfaction Planning, Representation, and Solving Methods. The committee members are David Smith from NASA, Chitta Baral, Pat Langley, and Mindo, who is ethereally present somewhere from Bay Area, and myself. We'll let Jay speak.
Okay. Thank you again all for coming. I'd especially like to thank Rao, my advisor, Chitta, and Pat, and David Smith, who's been visiting us for the last 3 weeks from NASA Ames, and Mindo, who's coming in from Xerox Park. I'd also like to wish you all a very happy holiday. Today is Earth Day, very important day for all of us. And I'd like to start out the talk with thinking about what you must have done in order to decide to come listen to my talk. And Eric, I should recite. So you're sitting at your desk and you're thinking about what to do today. Well, you can go purchase light bulbs, environmentally friendly light bulbs at IKEA or Home Depot. You could consider installing solar panels, volunteering to install solar panels. Maybe you might even meet Arnold Schwarzenegger for a photo op, though that might be unlikely in Arizona. You can pick up trash on the highway and recycle it. Or you can come to my proposal defense. When thinking about all these options, you know, you may have thought, well, I go to Home Depot or IKEA every once in a while anyway. Why do I need to spend time right now today to go get that? There's not really a lot. It's not really worth it to me to spend that extra time. It's kind of hot today, so staying outside volunteering is not a good idea. It doesn't seem worth it. But, you know, there's this guy doing this proposal defense, so I'll go ahead and attend the proposal defense. And what you've done in thinking about all of these options is partial satisfaction planning, which is the research topic that I've spent most of the last, I don't want to say how long.
I can.
thinking about days and nights.
So have you done everything you want to do in your thesis?
We won't go there either. The application for partial satisfaction planning go beyond, of course, thinking about whether to go to my proposal defense or not. There's been applications for Mars rovers. There's been thoughts of using it for UAVs, logistics problems, search and rescue problems, manufacturing, and also many of the international planning competition domains from 2002 on were intended to be partial satisfaction planning problems, but ended up not being implemented as such until much later. Some later competitions actually looked at partial satisfaction planning problems. So a brief history of partial satisfaction planning. You know, at least in AI, the thoughts of whether or not to achieve certain goals really began with Herbert Simon thinking about this idea of the organizational goal. So he came up with a mathematical model in terms of setting up constraints for which goals are worth what, and then using those constraints, he has an objective of finding the best set of goals to achieve. And then he later talked about some ideas for how to value goals. And then much later, 10 years later, and then again in 1993, there were some thoughts of using of using decision theory and possibly using decision theory in order to think about goal choice and valuation of goals. And then in 1993, in 2003, David Smith, who's here, gave a talk that's been dubbed the mystery talk at the summer school, the planning summer school. And he was talking to a group of young minds and said, well, if you want your planner to be used for NASA domains, what does your planner need to support? And one of those things was partial satisfaction of goals. And this, after this talk, there was a huge amount of research in the area of partial satisfaction planning. And in fact, I had part of that. All of the things listed in red, all the works listed in red, I had a part of. In fact, I had a planner in the planning competition that dealt with partial satisfaction of goals. And that planner won a Distinguished Performance Award, which amounts to basically second place for the competition. So why all of a sudden this big increase in focus on partial satisfaction planning? Well, it turns out that around that time there was a big revolution in scalability for planning techniques. Before around that time, it was difficult to come up with plans of even 6 to 10 actions within minutes, and then around that time, we got a scalability increase in the planners that people were coming up with. And this largely had to do with search control. So in the algorithms that were used, the control for directing search towards a solution ended up being improved significantly, and so we got this huge increase in scalability. So then it became possible to think about more than just action choice, but also on choice for which goals that you should achieve.
Did you kind of normalize with respect to the hardware between these two areas?
In terms of this graph?
No, yeah, in general, when you're saying 6 to 10 in minutes and then in seconds, I mean, I'm sure the hardwares were...
The hardware also, sure, of course, the hardware also helped, but there's actually, at the time, we saw...
how much did you think about it?
I did think about it some, but I believe that still in the past.
I'm sure there's improvement. I just wanted to know how much the hardware contributed and how much the other part contributed.
Well, of course it contributed because we get the the Moore's law effect. So this did contribute to it, but at the time when looking at different algorithms, we still saw, at least in works from the past, we saw an increase in scalability on the same machine. So when experiments were run on the same machine, of course, we saw an increase in scalability.
Jay, I can't buy this because for 20 years, the planning community was quite happy to work on very small scale problems. And within that, they still could have worked on partial satisfaction. They didn't. So this may have been part of it. It may have been part of a zeitgeist of oh, now we can do more kind of thing. Like, let's take on harder things. But they could have done it before. Why didn't they? You can do this later. But that's my position on it.
Okay. I think I just
he wasn't around.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Right. Wasn't around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So much to Pat Sergey and I have a little more to say about this topic. But so when there's been given this scalability increase, we could also think about working on even more complex dynamics, not just looking at goal choice. So some things we could think about: classical planning, which is just instantaneous actions. We model actions instantaneously. You could also think about adding numbers for modeling, say, fuel, numeric constraints. Temporal planning, which adds duration on actions. You can mix these two with metric temporal planning. You have non-deterministic actions, partially observable actions, and stochastic dynamics with your actions. But this is all really orthogonal to the idea of partial satisfaction planning. And you can consider partially satisfying your goals sort of independently of which dynamics you're looking at. So this is an orthogonal idea to all of these other system dynamics. So what we're going to look at in terms of partial satisfaction planning is the net benefit problem.
That looks like a pistol.
It's supposed to be a drill.
Drill bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Arizona.
guns are outlawed on campus as of yesterday.
The state gun is culturable.
You love carry concealed drill.
This is a very, very small Mars rover's example. And the idea is that we have three locations, and we have locations alpha, beta, and gamma, and we have several kinds of samples that we want to take at each of these locations, image on, in the case of gamma. Each of the actions for taking samples and moving between locations has a cost, and there is a reward for actually achieving certain goals, individual reward for achieving goals in this case. The objective here is to maximize the net benefit, which is the reward you achieve for actually achieving these goals, and the cost for achieving these goals using actions. These goals are soft, meaning that you don't actually have to achieve the goals, but what you, your main goal really is to maximize your net benefit. In terms of the reward function, reward can really be anything. In this case, we are looking at reward on individual goals, but you can define your reward in any way you want in terms of the plan and the goals you achieve. So what's the problem here? Why is this a hard problem? Well, in this small little example that we had, it seems pretty easy to approach it in one possible direction, which is to find a plan for achieving every single subset of goals. So you can consider achieving a, getting a plan for just alpha, just beta, just gamma, and then the various combinations, alpha, beta, alpha, gamma, and then all of them, and consider whether which of these plans is the best plan. But it turns out that in that case, you're going to need to find eight plans, but as you increase the number of goals that you want to achieve, it increases exponentially. So it becomes very quickly an unwieldy issue to actually find a plan for each of these goal subsets. So this is an impractical practical methodology. So what I'm going to be talking about are some challenges that we face for partial satisfaction planning. One is a goal representation, reward representation, realistic views of what reward should look like for planning problems. I'm going to propose a type of goal representation that I want to work on next, and also I'll talk about ways of solving problems with goal utility dependencies, which is the reward representation that I have worked on, and then I'll also go over some other things that I've worked on for partial satisfaction planning, and then talk about some proposed idea for working on the time-dependent goal reward. So first, going over goal dependencies. First, in order to, before going over utility dependencies, you should understand what the goal dependencies are in terms of cost. Cost dependencies have to do with the actions used to achieve a plan, to achieve a goal. So we can have either positively or negatively interacting goals when it comes to cost. An example of a positively interacting goal is where if you have a single action, where that action allows you to achieve two goals at a cheaper cost. So one example of this is if I'm coming from the lab here to home, I can stop by at the convenience store. So that's essentially on the way to going home, I can achieve another goal. This allows me to have, this is an example of a positively interacting goal. A negatively interacting goal is when, in order to achieve one goal, it actually makes achieving the other goal more costly. So an example of this is if I'm going to the grocery store, this is out of my way, so it makes it more costly to achieve my goal of going home. Another example of a negatively interacting goal is when you achieve one goal, when you pursue one goal, it actually makes achieving another goal completely impossible. So this is like an infinite cost for achieving the other goal. So that's cost dependencies on goals. These are defined by the plan. Utility dependencies, on the other hand, are typically defined by the user. And a utility dependency, an example of this, is a complementary utility dependency where we have socks and shoes. And having either socks or shoes has some individual goal reward, but having both together, we get much better reward. Just having socks all day is not necessarily a great idea. So we get much more reward for having both. And an example of a substitution So this and this and this the point here is that really the utility is greater than the sum of its parts. So it's greater than the sum of the individual utilities for each. An example of a substitution is where the sum of two gold is actually less than, the reward for two gold is less than the sum of its parts. So an example from my own life, I have a VW Beetle that gives me a car I can drive around. I like that car, and so I get some utility for that. I also inherited a Nissan Sentra, so I have two cars. Now, that doesn't really give me much more in terms of mobility, but it does give me an air conditioning, so it does give me some reward in sitting in Arizona. I still get some reward, but I don't have the same amount of reward as I would for just the sum of each individual vehicle.
But why the cost is, you got it free, so why it is 45,000?
Oh, well. I got it free, but there's huge amounts of maintenance costs.
You should get a hybrid or electric.
Okay.
No, if you were to buy them, sure.
Yeah.
No. So you said that the utility is less of your business, it's more. So that's confusing.
Mm-hmm. Like
more than
the cost difference.
Yeah.
It is much more than the cost difference.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So you would have bought it.
Yeah, I got it.
Are those really shoes?
They're old style shoes.
They're elf shoes.
What if it's available in 10 minutes?
Hopefully that doesn't give you any utility.
What's that?
Hopefully that doesn't give you any utility.
Well, if I'm going to the Renaissance. Okay, so just a little more formally about goal utility dependencies. We define goal utility dependencies as a subset of the set of all the goals. So then we define a function that maps over that set to a real value number, and then given all the goals that we achieve, we can sum over all of the functions that that have reward for each of the goal sets. So in this example, I have a single goal with a set of just one, which is socks, a set of just one that is shoes, a set of both, which is both shoes and socks, and then I can find the utility by just summing over these. So
why was that generalized?
No, just more.
I'm sorry. General. Why do you call it a general additive dependence model?
That's. I'm sorry. So an additive model is where you simply add the rewards for each individual goal. A generalized additive independence model is where you have these sets. And actually, this is what's defined originally by Backus and Grove, and so we use this model. Okay, so we're going to now talk about plan synthesis, but before I start getting into synthesizing plans, I'm going to give you just a little bit of background. I use a baseline search for my heuristic methods to search over, which is the SAPA-PS search. It's a forward search. It's based on A star. The G value is the net benefit of the plan found so far. The H value is a relaxed estimate on the plan, the net benefit to go, so how much net benefit I might get. The SAPA-PS heuristic has a method of looking at each individual goal and then seeing what the net benefit for that goal might be using a relaxed plan. And I'll get a little bit into what this might sort of relaxed plan sort of look like. It's an anytime search, so it returns plans as it finds them with increasing G value. So as it looks for plans, if it finds one that is of a better value than the one it previously found, then it will output that to the user. It's an A-star based search, so if we're using what's called an inimitable heuristic, which means the heuristic is overestimating always how much net benefit is to go, it looks at a particular state and it says there is no more net benefit to go, then we can stop searching and we can say we found the optimal. So this is what the search sort of looks like. We initially will start the rover at Alpha, and then we can choose among all of the choices from the point where a rover is at Alpha to moving to say Beta or Gamma, or taking a soil sample, and then this might look like the best net benefit node to search for next. So it will expand this node, and then it keeps on going and expands to the next node that looks best, and the next node that looks best. What we also do is we perform a look ahead. So given the relaxed solution to the problem, we look at all of the actions in the relaxed solution, and then apply them in succession to try to get deeper into the search space and find a better solution than we can find just through searching normally through with the typical A-star search. So we do have a technique for getting better solutions using this look ahead. So I'm going to very briefly go over what the planning graph is all about. The planning graph is typically used for heuristics. It's a method of looking at reachability of goals. So it can give you an idea of how much cost there is to go for a cost and benefit there is to go for each state in the search. So at the initial state, it has all of the values at the initial state. It ignores all of the deletion effects on actions. So essentially, it applies all of the actions that you can possibly apply at the initial state, and then looks at all of the resulting values from that point, then does this again, looks at all of the values from the next set, and then looks at all the actions that can be applied there, and then finally, when it looks like all the goals can be achieved, it stops. So from this, we extract what's called a relaxed plan, which is a plan over the problem. I won't go in detail on that, but the important thing is that we can also not only expand the planning graph in this way, such that we can get reachability analysis, but we can also look at the cost of each action and sum over the cost for achieving each task. So in this case, the action cost for sampling soil is 20, and we can say then that having the soil costs 20.
Question about your swapping criteria.
I'm sorry?
Question about your swapping criteria.
Yes.
You said you stopped expanding the graph when all of your goals appeared. Is that really the case, or do you wait until the cost increases by essence?
So I'm sorry, you're right. This is just for the example. We do a fixed point expansion. So we do an infinite look ahead, or infinite expansion to find where the costs stop changing.
Yeah. And there's also going to be some domains where you just cannot achieve certain goals, period.
That's right. And if that's true, sometimes the planning graph will discover that fact, but not always.
And the cost you're just adding, you said, so in the cost part you're not doing any kind of generalized addition or just adding the cost, or?
Just so you can do one of two things, and I'll actually talk about the other thing you can do. You can add the cost, or you can take the maximum values after each action. So if taking, having the soil, well, I guess that's not a great example in this case.
So is this a simple addition of each of the actions?
So you can take addition, or you can also just take the max value. So one other idea is to look at, in this case, driving from alpha to gamma costs 30, but in this case it costs 40. So rather than looking at, in this case driving from gamma to beta was 40, so costs 40. So rather than take the sum of these two, I can take the max of those two, and that gives me an admissible estimate.
Maximum that in 30.
Well, I'm sorry.
Because
I have to
less than 30.
10 answers. 40, maybe.
10 and.
Because you're either driving to beta, and then are you now in beta, it's harder to get to gamma from beta.
Yeah, I can't see a nice way of illustrating max.
Okay.
I don't have two preconditions. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
I mean, what is the intuition behind taking max? Is it the same axiom or is there a different axiom?
The intuition is that the okay, so you're looking for an invisible heuristic. So one way of finding an invisible heuristic is rather than summing these values, you just take the maximum value. It will at least cost as much as the highest value to achieve a goal.
No, admissible means you have to overestimate, not underestimate, right?
In this case, yes. But
so if you add, you still have admissible.
But the cost. I'm just looking at cost here. Admissible for net benefit is a maximum. I mean, sorry, is a overestimate. But in terms of the actions, I just need an underestimate for the cost to reach goals. And then after I find the cost to reach goals, then I can look at the rewards for the goals and then use that for my net benefit. Okay. Okay. So all of my heuristic techniques use the same kind of IP formulation. So all of my heuristics use integer programming or linear programming at some level. Now it turns out that the objective function that we use for the integer program is very similar to the objective function that Simon came up with for choosing goals. The difference is he just looked at cost, and we're looking at complete net benefits, the reward for achieving goals minus the cost for achieving them. And all of the heuristics also, since they're looking at goal utility dependencies, have constraints for those goal utility dependencies. So these are, you're going to see again because they, or at least pretty much going to see again because they're used in the heuristics.
Are you going to try and publish in this journal?
In this journal?
Yeah.
Administrative Science Quarterly? Does it still exist?
Probably.
That's not an IE journal back then.
I
don't think it was probably called IE back then.
Yeah.
I think IE have no difference.
Come on, we're not that young.
I looked at a few other papers. It looks to be more of a business journal.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, Simon did work for a while in GSIA, Graduate School of Industrial Administration, which then was the beginning of, that's where the GS was starting to. So we are kind of listening now.
But he left and came to operations research area.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to go over the planner that we ended up calling SPUD, which contains three heuristics that we implemented. The first two heuristics are H-guy max, guy is general additive independence, and H-guy sum, which with a max, again, does this max propagation on the planar graph. And the sum heuristic does the sum propagation on the planar graph. And so, the idea here is just to do that propagation, look at the cost you find from the propagation, then generate an IP over those costs that you find, and then the dependencies, which use these exact constraints, and then find which goals, given the cost that you estimate for the goals, and the reward that you guess from the goal utility dependencies, given that value, you return what the IP gives you back. So this is all encoded within an IP. If you have max propagation, then you get an admissible heuristic, and if you have some propagation, then you get an inadmissible heuristic.
So what are your decision variables
now?
What's your decision variables in the IP?
Our decision variables, over the objective function?
Yeah, what are you trying to optimize?
We're trying to optimize net benefit. So this is the utility.
Right, but with respect to what?
With respect to shoes.
With respect to the goals.
Okay.
Just Well, not based in
intellectual.
Well, the
turn goal means
objective
in my
mind. Yeah, I know.
No, but this is not trivial because there used to be this big divide between two communities who had symbolic goals and numeric objective functions, and this is the unification, right? I mean, it's not the only person who does it, but I mean, this is a fairly new development, right? 10 years that the people have been talking this way, really trying to bring them together.
But to answer Will, it's not quite relaxed plans. It's so the next heuristic that I'm going to talk about is HPI relaxed, which actually looks at.
So the example you gave before, it would be where to go. Examples are your decision variables. Which direction?
Yes. Okay. Basically, that's right. Okay, so now that I'm thinking about it, I think Will is right. That's right. It is relaxed plans that you're searching these data. So the next heuristic I'm going to talk about for the SPUDS planner is called HPI Relax. The idea here is to extract a relaxed plan, and then based on the planning graph, you extract a relaxed solution to the planning problem, which is a polynomial time search, and then we build the cost dependencies between goals, and then we optimize the relaxed plan by using, again, these constraints, and also some constraints over the causal relationships between actions. And after you've found which goals that you want to, that you believe will give you the best net benefit, you prune the actions that actually contribute to achieving that goal using the causal relationships that you have in the IP. So in this case, we decide we want to achieve G1 and G2, and we decide to get rid of G3, and we can remove A4 and A1, but we wouldn't remove A2 because that also contributes to getting G1 and A2.
You said polynomial time. In practice, I mean, that's theoretical, but
in practice, it's polynomial.
Well, yeah, but that's not good enough for me.
Okay.
I mean, polynomial can be very large. So, in practice, polynomials are too high. My new thing is I don't even sublinear isn't good enough for me. I want
subconstant.
No. I mean, so that you may not. I can imagine the scaling linearly with the number of goals. I don't know if that's true. You know, the number of actions is a different story. But
yeah.
But does it?
It scales linearly with the number of actions.
And actions too, in practice.
No, I'm sorry. What I said was polynomial was actually extracting the first relaxed plan, and then later you use the IP to prune the relaxed plan. Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Some results on these heuristics. So we tested over a pure IP approach. This is a bounded k-length optimal approach. So it won't actually guarantee that you get fully optimal solutions to your planning problem, but it'll give you a bounded length optimal solution to your planning problem. We tested this against SAP-PS, which was the baseline search, and we looked at the three heuristics. And it turns out that the HPI relax ends up doing best overall, not always, but overall it does best. So we had four different domains we looked at for these experiments. A satellite domain where we created a set of, on all these we created a set of goal utility dependencies that made sense for each domain. And then we ran all of these heuristics on increasingly more difficult problems, and so the IPUD approach, which was the pure IP approach, ends up doing pretty well at the beginning for most of these problems, but then doesn't scale as well as the problems get harder, and the HPI relax tends to scale much better.
I don't know what Zeno travel is, but it sounds like it would never fall.
It actually doesn't, for multiple reasons, including the speed of the planner.
Okay.
I was creating the initial version of the plan to solve this problem.
Actually, actually Dan Rell said he wrote all these papers in planning, the only thing he's known for is the Zeno travel problem.
We also developed a planner called Bebop, very similar to Spuds, but the main point here is that we have a different heuristic, HGI-LP, we call. And this is a very unique heuristic and actually has a lot going for it. It's a network flow model of the planning problem. It captures multiple values, multi-valued version of the planning problem. It uses a multi-valued version of the planning problem which captures mutexes. We get the multi-valued version of the problem by taking a part of another planner called Fast Downward, and then using the multi-value translation that it gives. And this heuristic, rather than relaxing delete lists, it relaxes action ordering. And after we encode the problem as an IP, we solve the LP relaxation of the problem. So just quickly an example of sort of what this heuristic looks like. If we have a simple problem where we have a package at location 1 and a truck at location 2, and we want to pick up the package and drive it back to location 2, we would encode the problem such that each of both the truck and the package are encoded as a set of flow constraints. We call these DTGs for domain transition graph. So basically, each of these locations becomes a node in the flow problem, and each of the actions becomes an edge. And we have what are called prevail constraints, which essentially act as preconditions from one flow problem to another flow problem. So this is how the problems are connected.
Is there any reason you couldn't have used the multi-value variable formulation for the previous one?
I don't understand what you mean.
So for your previous IP formulation, right? That doesn't seem to prevent you from using multi-value variable formulation.
No, you're essentially right. You could use the multi-valued variable formulation for the previous. Yes. It would be a little difficult for the causal graph heuristic that was sort of known for a multi-valued look of a procedural method for the multi-valued representation back at the time that the heuristic was developed. Because extracting a relaxed plan wasn't something that Malta did at that time for the causal graph heuristic, and it depends on extracting a relaxed plan. At least HGI relaxed did. But the newer heuristic, the context enhanced additive heuristic, you can extract relaxed plan quite easily, and I think now you probably could
reverse order the causal graph heuristic was first to relaxed plan extraction. The context enhanced additive heuristic improved by removing the dependency upon extracting a relaxed plan.
Okay, that may be true. I don't remember that, but okay. So yes, I mean, I think the answer is yes, that we could do this.
So we don't really know how much better this is.
Compared to that approach.
Unfortunately, there's a difference in formulation.
Yes, that's true. That's actually a good point. So I'll go over just briefly some of these constraints. They're very technical. So if action executes and all that detects the prevail conditions must also, prevail condition again is a sort of precondition between flows. If a fact is deleted, then it must be added to be re-achieved. It must also be added to be re-achieved. If a prevail condition is required, then it must be achieved. And then again, these utility dependency constraints are necessary so we can look at the goals. So one interesting thing also about this heuristic is that unlike the IP-based heuristic where we're pruning goals, this actually does not recreate an IP at each state. So in HGI Relax, we have to create a new IP for each state, for each relax plan. In the case of the LP heuristic, we just need to update a few constraints as to what the initial state is. This helps improve speed up. So in the case of HSKY-LP, on the problems that we ran, you know, travel rover satellite, we ended up finding the optimal solution. So the HSKY-LP heuristic is admissible, so we were able to find the optimal solution in 15 problems. HSKY-MAX was only able to at least claim optimality in 2 problems. And it actually turns out to do better. SPUDS here is HSKY relax. It turns out to do better also than the SPUDS heuristic, HSKY relax, using the look ahead techniques that we have implemented for the search. So I'm going to talk also a bit about something that's not really a heuristic issue, but really a matter of searching, improving search. So we also tried a search algorithm that was originally made for optimization problems. And this combines a regular search strategy with restarts, and it tries to find a good restart point using a learned function over the previous searches that it's done. It used, the original version of this used handcrafted features, but we, since we're doing domain-independent planning, we have to automatically derive features for the domain-independent planning framework. So the way the search works is it performs an A-star search. So this a little A-star search. It collects the tree for that A-star search and all the nodes in it. And then using the nodes in it and the values that it gets, it learns a value function B. And then using that value function B, it performs a hill climbing search to find a restart point. And then using that restart point, it does another A-star search. And we tried 2 feature sets, propositional features, which just are the true falseness of facts in the state, and also all the actions leading to that state. And we also tried a taxonomic syntax, which captures information like the number of packages not delivered or the number of goals not satisfied. And in this domain, rovers, we found a significant improvement. I don't have the other domains, but suffice to say there wasn't a huge improvement on those domains for this approach. So in the rovers domain, our HSKY relax heuristic ended up, even at the first set of easier problems, didn't end up finding particularly good net benefit, but then the taxonomic and propositional syntax learning methods ended up finding better net benefit.
I never heard Justin explain it that clearly, so thank you.
You're welcome. So I'm going to talk about some other things that I've done besides looking at the Go utility dependencies. So in the planning competition in 2006, we realized that the new language that was defined for the planning competition, PDDL3, it had the ability to specify soft goals, as well as LTL constraints, LTL goals. And one track of the planning competition was called simple preferences. That's what this SP stands for. In that track, the idea was that if you didn't achieve a goal, then you incurred some cost. But it turned out that there was a translation from looking at this problem in the PDDL3 SP language to the partial satisfaction planning framework that we were looking at for net benefit. So we implemented a translation and then used SAPAPS, the planner SAPAPS, to enter into the competition using this translation. And again, we won the Distinguished Performance Award for this, which was essentially second place. That was in 2006. In 2009, we also tested a idea for compiling, rather than compiling these problems to net benefit, we decided to try a compilation to actually looking at classical planning or hard goals. And so the idea there is that we can define a set of hard goals that essentially act as if you're, so essentially say whether you've evaluated a goal or not, and you use actions to decide whether you get a cost or don't get a cost. And we ran some experiments on these two compilations to see which one sort of does best. It turned out that most of the time the compilation to net benefit tended to do better, though not all the time. Sometimes we got a basically equivalent performance. And just because I don't think I mentioned it, Yochan TS was the name of the planner that we entered, and Yochan Cost is what we ended up calling the planner that had the compilation to Cost. So the last thing before I get into the proposed work, we're also faced with a project where we wanted to use, we were looking at the urban search and rescue problem. So the idea is you have a whole bunch of injured people in a building, and you have a robot that's supposed to be a robot that starts at actually the beginning of the hallway and needs to make it to the end of the hallway within some deadline to deliver medical supplies. So on the way to delivering the medical supplies, the robot finds that someone tells it, hey, also, while you're on your way delivering these medical supplies, look for injured people. Report all injured people. And so the robot now has this new goal. It doesn't know where all the injured people are. It's not sure. So this is an open world problem, and it's constrained by this temporal resource, and which is the deadline it needs to reach the end of the hallway. So we thought, well, soft goals, PSP, seems to be a good approach to solving this problem, and it turns out that it does work okay. Basically, what this allows the planner to do is ignore goals, conceptually ignore goals that it's not aware of, because these goals are soft. Plus, it allows these things that we call open world quantified goals or conditional goals, where if it goes into a room, looks for a person, discovers a person, then that enables the goal of reporting the person. So then it gets reward for reporting the person.
Although that's a pretty trivial example. That's easy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well. but actually, conditional goals do generalize.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to go over my proposed work.
In that particular formulation, is the utility calculated when the new concrete goal is generated, or do you know it ahead of time from the generalized structure?
Okay, so I can explain what we did. It's assumed ahead of time. So every time you see a room, you assume that you think there might be a person in the room. You just sort of imagine that there might be a person in the room. You look at the net benefit that you could achieve if you search for the best net benefit plan, assuming that there is a person in the room. And you also worry about your temporal deadline.
But I mean, you could be able to perceive somehow, you know, how injured the person is, and so there are two people. You want to report them in the order they're in, you know, of the criticality and so on. And so is there anything about the framework that's limited? Could you incorporate that kind of stuff without really losing anything? Is there something about the formulation that's dependent on there being constant values associated with these goals?
Yeah. So the way, well, I mean, the complex answer is that you could, with some modeling tricks, figure out how to do this exactly as you described. But the way that it's been actually implemented, no, we look at everyone as being equally.
No, I understand that. I'm talking about whether the partial satisfaction algorithm. You clearly have a way of using partial satisfaction issues to throw in new goals every so often, right?
Mm-hmm.
From effectively, the system's doing it, but and so reason why if you have two goals of the same type, they have to have the same value or the actions cost the same. But the algorithm would still treat each of those separately and do all the updates the way it should and so on. You're not really relying on, you're not, for example, pre-compiling the open world goals into the things. You're, as a new one comes
yeah,
out,
oh, okay,
it says,
yes,
no,
yes,
it's a whole new goal.
Yes, you're right. Yes, yes, yes.
And so it doesn't matter. It could have some arbitrary number associated with it. Yes.
Okay.
That was, I guess.
What does open world mean?
So open world,
it's
basically...
It's hard to give a closed definition of it. Go ahead.
You do open-ended definition of it.
So an open world is basically what first order logic does. If you don't specify facts, so first order logic, you specify a bunch of facts and a bunch of reasoning over those facts. If you can't figure out, if you ask this database of facts and logic, what is the answer to this question? If it can't figure it out, it just will say unknown. I don't know. That's what an open world essentially means. You're allowed to say, I don't know. At the highest level, that's what it means. A closed world, on the other hand, if you can't figure something out, you assume it to be false. So if you ask a question that couldn't be figured out, given the rules that you have, you would essentially assume falsity. It's not true, rather than unknown. So in terms of the list of facts, yes. So that's the closed world assumption as defined. There's a lot of variation on the closed world assumption.
In the planning community, was it before assume closed world, or was it common to assume closed world?
Yeah.
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 So closed world is like conditional probability that something is correct?
No.
Has
nothing to do with that. But we should let James tackle this, because this is a great test.
So where was closed, in what context closed world was assumed in planning before?
Closed world was it was more like what David was explaining, that facts that aren't specified are assumed false.
Specified where?
Specified within the initial state. So you give an initial state. If you don't specify a fact, then it's assumed to be false.
And the analog for goals is, if you don't hear about a goal, you assume it doesn't exist.
Yeah, well,
okay.
That's close.
That's close, yes.
Well, yes. The point is that people have been extending it beyond that, and that's important.
Yeah, people have looked at it. So sort of works out rules. So my proposed work is to define goal utility, or sorry, time-dependent goal reward, which was initially thought of by Hadaway and Hanks in 1993, and I'd like to come back to that idea of reward. So, as an quick example of what this means, say we have perishable food and we have a logistics problem where we need to deliver each of these packages. One contains apples, one oranges, one blueberries, are all loaded at this location here. I actually looked up the perishability of these items, and it turns out the blueberries don't last all that long in a refrigerated cabin. So we have a function on reward based upon the delivery of each of these perishable items. And we have we can have a soft deadline where if we achieve the goal before this deadline, then we can get full reward, and if we achieve after the deadline, then we get diminishing reward, linearly decreasing diminishing reward. But
since these things start rotting right away, we can say that the deadline actually is right at the initial state. So we will always have a decreasing reward, decreasing profitability, essentially, for each design. So if we were simply to look for a plan of the least make spend, it turns out that the best plan is to deliver the apples, then deliver the blueberries, then oranges, if we're just looking at make span, meaning the how long it takes to traverse and deliver all of these things. But if you notice, delivering the blueberries in this order, apples and blueberries, you're going to have rotten blueberries. So, and also you're going to have rotten oranges. So it turns out the best order is actually not the shortest plan, but first deliver the blueberries, then the oranges, then the apples. So I've given some thought to working on this problem. One way to consider working on this problem is to have someone else solve it and to actually compile the problem into another kind of problem. So it turns out that there is a kind of planning problem that looks at set numbers, which we can use for reward, and time. That's called metric temporal planning. And so I've been giving some thought to compiling the problem into metric temporal planning. It turns out that in the language that's used by state-of-the-art planners, PDDL, it's hard to capture the goal achievement time. So that's one challenge that I need to address. And also, we need to come up with a way of evaluating reward when we're looking at converting it to metric temporal planning. So, just very quickly, there's a few ideas that I have thought of. One is to use this thing called pound t, which gives you the relative time point for the start of an action to the end of an action. This is for capturing the goal achievement time, but it turns out that most planners don't support this. So instead, we needed to come up with some other compilation tricks for saving the time that a goal was achieved. Presuming we've saved when a goal is achieved, we also have to consider the semantics of when reward is actually taken into account. If a goal is deleted and then re-achieved, do we consider the first time a goal was achieved or the last time? So, goal fact is deleted and then re-achieved. It turns out that if we define all of this, then it's not all that difficult to come up with a way to evaluate the reward. And what we can do is take some ideas from, take some ideas from Kater and Geffner, in which they have an action called is done. So this means that the plan is finished. After you've saved all the goal achievement times for the plan, then when you're done with the plan, you go into this evaluation mode and you execute this is done action, which gives you a fact done, and it disables all the other actions. Then you can, if you have a goal, so in this case we have goal G1, we can collect the reward for the goal given the time point that it was achieved, and then say we've evaluated G1. If we don't have a goal, then we simply say that we've evaluated G2 and we don't get any reward. So I implemented this sort of initial idea of compilation. It turns out that I didn't get too good of results. I tested on some easy elevators problems that we hand-generated. I also tested on some problems that were automatically generated, and neither of those worked very well. Only the easiest of problems were solved. And it appears the biggest issue is actually this idea of grabbing the current time. So I need to think of other compilation tricks for grabbing the current time in PDDL. And then also I expect to explore a direct solving method for this problem.
Does Crikey deal with the cross-edge team or not?
No, I don't believe it does.
I caught one in something. The most recent recall.
Oh, it does? Okay.
All it does. That's what the whole issue I talked about, the linear front loop is the continuous change.
Yes, that's true.
How do you grab the current time?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's since it didn't work, I didn't really want to talk about it. But basically, the way I try to grab the current time is by using domain axioms right now. So if a goal is achieved, so domain axioms, for those who are unaware, are things that are rules in the planning problem that, in effect, enable certain facts to be true given certain other facts. Certain other formulas being satisfied, really. So I use domain axioms initially, which essentially, when a domain axiom fires, then it turns off the possibility of executing any other action until we save the current time point using the sort of other tricks that I use for on each action. I actually am looking at the duration of the actions and saving when an action ends, when an action begins, and then looking to see if that value is less than the previous value. So, in summary, I went over some representations. I'm thinking about the goal utility dependencies in particular. I've done a lot of work in, and then I'm planning to work on time-dependent goal utilities or time-dependent goal reward. And I went over some solving methods for goal utility dependencies, heuristic approaches, and the search approach. And also, there were a few other things that I did along the way related to partial satisfaction planning. And we also have this application that we worked on that uses partial satisfaction planning. And here's a list of relevant publications and their citations. If you would like to cite me, I'd be very happy.
If I was going to get all of these journals, I would be oversubscribed.
The Google citation?
This is Google citation, yes.
Google citation has some problems. It shows some.
I hope it's an underestimate.
Yeah.
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 What is the problem?
Probably
yes. Check
it out. You look at the list of people who are citing you. It looks like a 1960 paper is citing my 2000 paper.
Cool.
So what exactly is your problem?
The question of to do with time, right? What is the notion of time here? Can you
He's doing a temporal planning.
So this is probably a very unfair question because this question is probably over your head in a sense.
Okay.
But you know, if you go back to that, I mean, these problems I have been working on for years and years. There's these huge literatures regarding like going to the like that one, for example.
Okay.
I can write an IP in 5 minutes here. That would solve this problem.
So one thing with IP is that it requires bounded length solution. So first of all, IP is piece-based, MP complete.
Yes.
It turns out that planning in general is, well, at least classical planning is piece-based complete. So it's actually, it turns out to be in a higher complexity class. And the reason for that is that in IP, you only have so many variables, and you could only plan in terms of specifying these problems only to some length.
There is no length issue here, so you know, all you're asking here is which order should I be visiting these nodes, right?
Well, in this problem, yes, but this is in general. We want to have the domain-independent methods for solving these kinds of problems. We'll
domain-independent.
Really
so,
what makes this harder in IP is when you deliver the apple to that location,
uh-huh.
You can go pick up another food type and drive back over the edge. And then go pick up another thing at where you used to be and go back over the edge again. So you have to redo actions many times. So as an IP, just using one variable for each location doesn't work. Now,
answer is that people are aware of the connection, and the real issue is the scale up, you know, in terms of, and in fact the same situation occurs for MDPs, PharmDPs.
Right.
Most of the earliest work in MDPs and PharmDPs was done by people in OR, and the exact methods normally say this works fine for 8 states, but mostly unless you hand code the problem, the number of states, you know, for planning problems tends to be much higher.
So
it's oftentimes it's really an issue of.
So what do you lose here, though? I mean, what is it that you're losing? You must be
time,
losing something.
Time, life.
Yeah,
I mean,
computational
time. You take
no,
long.
No, like with this, you know, you must be losing some.
Oh yeah,
like
this is. So the
So you always generate suboptimal solutions, or what is it?
Yeah, the optimal. I mean, you should mention that. The question of optimality.
Yeah,
what is the deduction is this from the original,
yeah.
you know, from
then
an IT formulation, for example. That's what I'm trying to understand.
Because something that is optimal, sometimes you said we may not get optimal. Are you claiming all the heuristics give you optimal or some?
Given that we have, in this case, this is a different question, but given that we have a admissible heuristic, if the search stops, then I can say that the solution is optimal. If the search doesn't stop, then I just cut it off.
So all your heuristics are admissible?
Not all of them. Two of the heuristics that I went over weren't. Guy relax is inadmissible, and
is
H is not admissible, and H guy sum is also not admissible.
So for some of them you have, a few admissible heuristics, and if it stops, then you know you got
yes.
You got customers.
Where is okay, so you're done with your talk. So the formally, the idea is, as people are asking, it's the open question session for a while, until the questions are over, and at which point then the session becomes closed and you get to leave. So are there any other questions from people in attendance?
So what's slide 29? Yeah, so this seems a bit like a straw man here. You can have a classical planning and then use a classical planner.
I wanted a one-to-one comparison with the idea. So, I did use SAPPVS here, but it's just in regular looking for the smallest cost.
Just trying to ask the question of whether it's a good idea to have rewards as a separate thing.
Yeah, basically. That's the idea.
Okay. Did you want to try running classical planning?
I could very well do that, yes. In fact, you know that Cater and Gessner they did that with Llama already, and they actually had a compilation that turns out to basically have much more speed up than the compilation that I use.
Other questions in the open session?
No, but I'll wait for somebody else.
So, have you looked at how does this relate to the work in real time community?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
You're trying to do
jamming
or temporal functions.
Yes, in the latter work, yeah.
So how does it relate to the work in
real-time? So you mean like real-time scheduling and that sort of thing? I think the short answer is that you need to come up with a way of making these algorithms real-time, and then you would have a way of doing finding real-time solutions. So there are methods that you can apply that would probably work here. For instance, you look at anticipatory planning or hindsight planning, this kind of thing, just that you would basically be doing real-time. There's several algorithms related to that. But you need to change the search. My plan is to not do that initially.
actually the proposal doesn't define how many goals are actually needing to be achieved, but it does talk about the fact we use actually these are modified IPC problems from the International Planning Competition, which scale up in this way. In fact, we add some goals.
Right. Okay. So there's the number of goals and there's the number of actions.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of objects in the domain, right? And so and you have predictions about how it's going to scale with respect to each of them? Again, on average, not theoretically.
Yes. I mean, I predict that. So actually, this is an interesting question. So.
Well, I hope so.
Yes. H guy, it is very interesting. Very, very good question. So HGuy LP does have a problem with scalability on some problems. So it turns out in the Zeno travel domain, on the hardest of the problems, that heuristic I actually wouldn't expect to scale very well, because it turns out to slow down quite significantly in this domain. And the reason is because there are many, many constraints between these flows. So the issue has to do with the way the domain is modeled using fuel. It basically creates a huge number of constraints between moving and the fuel level, and this slows down the solving of the LP pretty significantly. So I don't expect that heuristic. But the other heuristics, I think, would scale better. In fact, I believe that HGuy Relax would do much better on those kinds of problems. So, yeah.
Any other questions?
Jay, my turn to ask questions.
Yeah, you can ask questions.
So can I only...
If you don't like it, just...
So yeah. Well, can I ask only questions related to the presentation, or can I also ask questions related to the proposal that you set out?
So the idea is that you can ask, I mean, you can generally ask a question about the presentation right now, and then you can have chance to grill him just with the committee present, and then other people. I mean, right now the room is, of course, the audience, the public is also here. Public audience is here. So, not public, but
public.
Even I. It's totally open world right now.
Okay, then I
will
ask one then.
Okay.
So it seems to me that for the time-dependent utility, then you only do the linear decay of the utility right now? Do you plan to handle other kind of function like nonlinear?
I don't actually plan to do that. It's, as some of us know, very difficult to plan for nonlinear changes in numeric values. So my initial goal is just to look at linearly. If I'm successful very quickly, then perhaps I'll look at more complex reward models on time.
Yeah. Okay, maybe I will ask the second question along the same line. So it seems that you invest a lot of time on developing heuristics based on linear programming encoding of the relaxed mind and so on. But normally, linear programming encoding has problem with encoding like temporal planning when you have concurrency and so on. So, when you have to modify the planner to deal with this proposed future work, do you also plan to expand the previous LP base, or you will go with totally new approach?
I mean, that's a very tough question to answer right now. I thought some about using IPLP approaches. I don't have a very good idea of whether those will actually be super successful, but that's certainly something that I'm thinking of looking at. The first thing that I looked at was just the compilation approaches, and I've then subsequently got involved in some other things, so I haven't really had the opportunity to think about
specialized approaches like extending the heuristics.
I will have other questions regarding the compilers and approaches,
okay.
I think, later too.
Okay. We'll have
a question about the reward. Why not set functions?
So that's another question that actually you and I have talked about. So it's possible to define this as step functions. You could also, on this kind of, unfortunately I don't have a slide on this, but on a linearly decreasing function, with several linearly decreasing functions, you can kind of approximate step functions. Of course, you could also approximate a linear decreasing function with a step function. It's sort of, I'm okay with using a step function if that gives me a better solution approach, given the fact you can sort of approximate either of them.
For your the heuristic, I mean, you talked about when you were talking about the general additive thing. So are all these heuristics with respect to the general additive?
All the heuristics I went over do handle the general additive model for goals.
Yeah. I mean, my worry there is if you're general additive. So suppose there are the goals have, so there are n goals, say n separate ones, and the model would then have all combination. I mean,
no. So I guess that I'm sorry that wasn't very clear. And I don't mean to interrupt.
No,
but I think I know what you're saying. So you don't have to specify all combinations. You only specify those combinations that give you some reward. So you don't have to specify combinations that give you zero reward. Now, it's true that you might have a model that has a huge number of combinations, and sure, that will slow down the ID. And I haven't really seen, and actually I haven't really seen any significant change, and I have tried very large numbers of combinations. I haven't seen any.
I mean, this could be exponential there, right?
Yeah, it could be. It could be exponential. Exactly.
How much of the time in that case is spent solving
I don't have a percentage number, but I think that would be easy to find out. However, I can say that comparatively to just for extraction relaxed plan only, there is a slowdown of the entire heuristic of about 3 to 200 times for each state. So, which of course would be across the entire search. And so as the number of goals increases, the number of dependencies increase, it slows down that much.
I was not clear how the heuristics take into account all these different combinations.
Okay.
Where
so
are the heuristics take into account?
I think the best slide to look at first is this. So we encode each of the utility dependencies using these IP constraints.
Okay.
So for every goal utility dependency, we have a goal utility dependency k. We look at the sum of all the goals in the goal utility dependencies. This is an IP, and then subtract that from the cardinality of the set minus one. And then we also
so this is using the objective function, right?
These are the constraints.
Yes. So I'm trying to see, I was looking at your proposal when you talk about visible heuristics, and most also the proposal, I didn't see a place where you actually went down and proved that those heuristics are admissible. So that probably means that it is obvious that they're admissible, and if they're obvious, I cannot see how you can claim obvious with respect to so complicated thing.
I guess that is a failing on in the proposal. We know in planning that the max propagation is admissible.
With respect, in the presence of a generalized additive thing?
Okay, and in terms of the generalized additive independence, these are solved sort of optimally. Using the IP. So the IP is actually going to be an optimal solution to the general additive independence models, right? And then if you have two
you're not using IP in the relaxed mode thing.
No, not in the propagation.
Right.
However, we know that this is going to give you a useful value. So basically,
how do you know that?
Well, I mean, I could think about this for a while and just try to remember the proof.
No, no, is there a proof in some other paper? Somebody proved?
There is a proof.
Who proved that?
This is, I believe, Hector Geffner in 99, be right?
2000?
Okay.
And he used additive, generalized additive?
No. So I'm not quite finished.
Okay.
So we know that we can estimate admissibly the cost for achieving the goals in terms of cost. And we know that the IP will solve optimally the generalized additive in this model, right? So basically, we have an admissible value on how much it costs to reach these goals, and we have an admissible value on the solution to the generalized additive independence model. So basically, this gives us an admissible value.
I cannot see that quickly, so you might write down specific.
Okay, yeah, I can actually.
So this always annoys me, because you mix up between utility and reward.
Yeah.
Utility is reward minus cost. He has an admissible estimate of cost. He has an admissible estimate of reward.
I mean, so where does he prove that he has an admissible estimate of the reward in presence of this generalized additive thing?
Well, the simple idea is just add up all the rewards.
So? And does it do that?
And that would be an invisible estimate reward.
Right, does it do that?
The second order idea is to use the IP to get a better estimate. So the
but
starting
you didn't use the IP to get the estimate.
The IP proves that it's admissible.
No, but you doesn't use the IP to get the estimate, right?
The IP, yes. The IP gets the estimate for the rule.
I know, but you said in here you don't use the IP.
This is for the cost.
Okay.
The planning graph does an invisible estimate of cost.
Okay.
The IP does an invisible estimate. Come together. So.
And when you do the IP in the cost itself, also you have generalized additive with respect to cost, also, right?
No, the general additive independence model is only with respect to
cost. Only
with respect
to cost. So. Okay.
So the fact that you're using SAGE in some of this work, does that mean that a few years from now we'd expect your algorithms to be in orbit?
That would be nice, but I don't know.
You know what,
so
most people didn't get that joke, but I'm going
to
explain later.
So, since, are there any questions from non-committee members?
So,
if not, then you get to the rest, everybody other than the committee and the candidate get to go out.
What is Justin doing now? Is he retired, or is he still working with them?
I mean, I doubt.